now we'll be going into a bigger one. So we'll begin Sefer Shoftim. Sefer Shoftim, we need to learn Sefer Shoftim with the Rekha, the background of where it fits into the story in Nach itself, in Tanakh itself. So Sefer Shoftim comes right off of the heels of Sefer Yehoshua. Sefer Yehoshua was spent largely with two tasks. Number one is conquest of the land, the wars of taking over the land. And secondly was the portioning out of Eretz Yisrael and divvying out the land, Alpi Hashem, Alpi HaGoral, to all of the Shvatim in Eretz Yisrael. And that's really the dominant theme and the entire role of the Sefer, with Yehoshua as the leader of Klal Yisrael. Why is that important? That's important because, number one, you need to know where we are in the progression and the state of the Jewish people, level-wise and progression-wise, meaning we're only about 24 years into being in Eretz Yisrael. We're very, very young as a nation, and we still have a lot to learn as a people with our own government, with our own leadership, and what that means, you know, having our own land. Some things that we can really relate to today, and I would argue that some of the challenges, opportunities, and problems that we see throughout Sefer Shoftim are recurring not only in the Sefer, which is a common refrain in the Sefer itself, but is a continuous refrain throughout our history. The vacuum and the void of leadership, the effect of culture and acculturation and assimilation on the Jewish people, even in the land of Israel, and how that deeply affects us, even when the writing is on the wall that things should be different, we don't change. And that is a common theme. It's not a happy-go-lucky Sefer, but there's a lot, it's very cyclical in the order and the way that it goes. It goes from up and down, up and down. The Sefer spans about approximately 350 years of history. Add up all the Shoftim, and it's about approximately 350 years. It's debated exactly how many Shoftim we approximately had. I'll just give you some numbers over here to appreciate this. Really, Otniel ben Knaz was the first Shoftim. There are about 14 different Shoftim, give or take. Shimshon is probably the last Shofet mentioned here. There might be a few minor ones. And then there's a discussion whether Shmuel is really the final Shofet. Eli HaKohen, we know Eli HaKohen from the Haftorah we know about Eli HaKohen from the Haftorah on Rosh Hashanah, that he might have been also a Shofet at his time. Shoftim itself, how do we translate the word Shoftim? Shoftim means judges, right? But it's not the way that we typically refer to. This is not a base in the classic sense of judges or adjudication. That wasn't really the main role of a judge, of a Shofet in this chapter. Rabbi Soloveitchik, when talking about Devorah specifically, who is our only female of the judges, and there's a lot to talk about there from a halachic perspective about
all the female five-star general.
She was a five, right. One of their jobs, Rabbi Lapp is 100% correct, was to be a general of the army. They weren't necessarily judges in the classic sense. They were leaders and teachers and guides for Klal Yisrael. In fact, some explain the first mission in Pirkei Avos in light of this. What do we have? Moshe kibel Torah misinai, u'misara l'Yoshua, v'Yeshua l'Zakenim, u'Zakenim l'Anjei Knesset Hagadola. Yeshua gave it to the Zakenim. Who are the Zakenim that he's referring to? So many understand that the Zakenim are
the Sanhedrin.
Right, to some of the Sanhedrin, but some understand it as the Kanim are the Shoftim. Yeshua passed it on to the Shoftim, and that's where we find ourselves.
Rabbi.
The Sefer, one second. The Sefer was written by Shmuel HaNavi, which is important because it's really a retrospective. Shmuel did not live through these times. He lived after, which is very interesting in terms of understanding the Sefer, as opposed to his own Sefer, Sefer Shmuel, or David, or Sefer Tehillim, where David wrote it in real time. This was written after everything had occurred, which gives it a certain flavor itself. Sorry, was that go ahead. Who was this? Was it Nathan?
Yes, Rabbi.
Yeah.
Yes. What qualified a person to be called a shofet?
So, okay, good. Great question. What qualified somebody to be a shofet? You know, is it just, you know, any Tom, Dick, and Harry could be a shofet? How does that work? The Abarbanel, Rav Dan Yitzchak Abarbanel, who served as the personal doctor for Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand, he writes that there's five differences and five similarities, approximately, it could be more or less, between a king and a shofet. So the similarities are that a shofet was appointed by Beis Din and accepted as the leader, right? So there need to be a formal exception as this person as the leader of Klal Yisrael. But a difference here, Nathan, is this wasn't necessarily appointed by God. There wasn't a Shemen HaMishcha oil appointed over the person's head that demarcated that this person was really considered the king, which is very, very, you know, important, you know, and understand this, but it was accepted by everybody else. Number two, there were kings and shoftim were military leaders, like Rabbi Lapp said. Number three, they were able to make their own specific laws for certain halachos. We call it makin v'onshin shalom min hadin. If they felt that somebody was out of line, not against them necessarily, but the punishment needed to be handed to them, they were given the authority to do that. We'll see later on, David HaMelech invoked that a few, you know, several different times. They were afforded the kavod of the king, meaning if there's mor b'malchus, there is somebody that is violates respect of the shofet, then there is a law that they can be, you know, jail, they can be punished, the consequences can be death. And there's a continuum. Just like when it comes to the king, you know, the kingdom is passed on from one king to the next. Sometimes that's a problem as to how exactly that works out, and some people think they deserve it and others don't. That doesn't seem to be such a big issue here about who is the next deserved shofet, as opposed to when it comes to the malchus, especially the splitting of the kingdoms and David's children. Here, as opposed to a king, is chosen by a Navi. A Navi very clearly is very involved in that depiction, and not here. A king has very specific different halachos. For example, a king can't have horses, too many horses. A king can't marry more than 18 wives, right? David HaMelech married 18. Shlomo HaMelech violated that halacha. And a king has to carry around an extra Sefer Torah. That's a mitzvah min Torah in Parsha Shoftim. A shofet doesn't need those rules. And there's another halacha that you can't carry if a king dies. That scepter that he has gets thrown away. We get rid of it. After a king dies, the king's wives are not allowed to marry anybody else. That's a halacha also. And that's part of Mora B'malchus. And that is, again, part of this halacha here, where the king has very specific types of halachos, where the shofet did not have these halachos. But the entire story is a big pendulum back and forth. Leadership, a void of leadership, 40 years on, 40 years off. What's fascinating is that there's a Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah quoting a pasuk in Shmuel, that Shmuel references a sefer, a book called the Sefer HaYashar. And the Gemara wants to know, what book is Sefer Shmuel referring to? The book of the straight, the book of the righteous. So no, what book is called Sefer HaYashar? Most famously, the Sefer HaYashar is the book of Bereishis. The Netziv, in his introduction to the book of Bereishis, tells us that why is it the book of the straight? Because that's we learn how to interact with people. We learn midos, we learn marriage, we learn relationships, we learn chinuch, how to raise children, and how to not raise children, and not have, have poor relationships with their spouses. We learn all of that from Sefer HaYashar Bereishis. However, another opinion of the Gemara says Shoftim is Sefer HaYashar, and it's sort of like a patch to Sefer Yashar. It's a cynical remark. Because Sefer Shoftim is not Sefer HaYashar. One of the common refrains in the Sefer is Ein Melech Vayi Bayamim Ahem, Ein Melech B'Yisrael. There is no leadership amongst the Jewish people. Ish Ko HaYashar Be'ein Av Yaseh. Anybody could do whatever they want. Ko HaYashar. Everyone does what they think is the right thing to do. There is no moral responsibility one for the other. That is something I think we can all relate to these days, where we are in a vacuum of leadership. If you think about the past year and how many great leaders amongst Klal Yisrael were lost just in this past year. It's heart-wrenching. Not just the modern Orthodox community, I think all of Klal Yisrael lost so many leaders. And it's incumbent upon us to think about that. What is important about leadership? Why is that necessary? I think maybe you would argue a year ago it wasn't maybe the most important thing. But we see how significant this has been during the pandemic to have leaders that we can trust and we could put our faith into, and we've lost so many. So we find that this sefer really begins with this void in leadership. Why is that? Sefer Yoshua, just go back to that, is an amazing sefer, not just because of the conquest. It's a little bit. It gets a little bit redundant. This guy gets this city. This guy gets this city. Okay, great. But Sefer Yeshua is powerful in that there's no complaining in Sefer Yeshua. The Jewish people complained for 40 years in the Midbar. They drove Moshe nuts. They drove him crazy. And you'd expect, and that's where they had everything. They had the man. They had the water. They had every need was to air conditioning and heating. They had every need taken care of. Just imagine Instacart, right? You get all the food straight to your house. Amazon. It was non-stop for Moshe, right? Yet, so you'd be nervous for the Jewish people. They come to Eretz Yisrael. They have to fend for themselves. They got to work the land. They got to plant their own trees. They got to make their own crops and make their own bread. You'd expect they'd give up after minutes, right? We can't do this. How can we? Yet, when they give them the responsibility, the Jewish people did not falter. Only one time, the entire Sefer, that was after they lost the Battle of Ai, did they complain. Only once. Very shocking, right? Yoshua was a certain type of leader. He had a certain type of style, maybe different than Moshe, maybe positive. He wasn't as holy and out there and connected as Moshe was. Moshe was the highest there ever will be. But somehow connecting to the people caused him not to complain. There was no riffraff, no air of raff in that way. Yet, just one complaint. But unfortunately, Yoshua, what he did not do was he did not pass on the leadership to somebody else. Yoshua dies and nobody steps up. Yoshua doesn't appoint somebody to be the next leader. That
Rabbi, how was Yoshua picked? Moshe just picks them, or it's divinely decided.
Parshas Pinchas. Parshas Pinchas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? You know, Moshe is worried about who's going to take over when he dies. Now that Moshe knows in Parshas Pinchas, I'm not making it. Chaymei Meriva, I did too many mistakes. I know I'm not getting in. Yifkod Hashem lokei aruchas l'chol basar. Hashem, I need to choose. Hashem, help me. Kadosh Baruch Hu chooses Yeshua. Yeshua doesn't ask. Yeshua doesn't get involved in this. And that's, so there's, Yeshua dies, a huge gadol, right? The leader, the person that's brought them into the promised land. And now there's nothing left, right? So what do we do? What happens? You know what happens? Anarchy. When you have no leader and you have 12 tribes, that one person to bring them together, to be the glue, to connect them together, Ish kol ha-yasher bein av yaseh, everybody does what they think is right in the eyes of God, in the eyes of themselves. And that is very, very, you know, significant to understand what we are learning and what, you know, what this Sefer is really all about. That is one aspect of this, which is the vacuum of leadership, which we find ourselves in Sefer Shoftim. The second point is the acculturation. Yehoshua was not completely successful. Whether it's completely his fault, it wasn't his fault. That's for debate when we learn Sefer Yehoshua. But there were nations that were left in the land of Israel. Nations were left. Some tricked Yehoshua. Some were just, they didn't finish conquering the land. People were left in the land with their idolatry and with their culture. And ultimately that led to assimilation. Ultimately, that led to the Jewish people in different occasions hedging their bets. We have our God. We have a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But what about, hey, why not worship something else? Maybe they're right. Maybe they're right. And that every time that happens, they fall into that trap. They lose the land. They lose Eretz Yisrael. They don't have sovereignty over the land of Israel. It's taken over by Kushan Rishatayim. It's taken over by Eglon Melech Moab. It's taken over again, the Plishtim at the end, again and again and again. You know, you think about it, you know, this is the next generation. What do they say? Every 25 years of the generation? These days, it might be even less than that because of how fast the world is moving. But just think about, you know, post-Holocaust generation, post a generation that appreciated 1948 and lived through 1967. And then you have that generation sort of turning, right? And what happens then when you lose that, you know, deep emotional connection to Eretz Yisrael and that bond that's supposed to be created? And those leaders that represented that time period and that era could share stories with you and share that connection are no longer with us. That connection dissipates. That relationship goes away. And that's what happens in Sefer Shoftim. It's 350 years. And what happens during that time? When that connection is lost, you know, that's the second, right? One is the vacuum of the leadership. The second is the acculturation, the assimilation with all the people around them. Again, the further away we are from revelation, Har Sinai, the further away we are from experiencing entering the land or the miracles of winning the wars, the conquests of Jericho, and destroying the kings in the beginning of Yeshua, the less that we are connected to that. And it just becomes history, and it becomes memory, and it does not become a part of us. And that is, you know, very significant. And I think we can all relate to that in a very, very significant and real way. So let's begin now a few of the psukim into the Sefer and remind everybody we are learning together. And we'll begin right at the top. V'yacharei Mos Yehoshua. This is exactly the way we said it. This is the way it's framed. V'yacharei Mos Yehoshua. V'yish'alu b'nei Yisrael v'Hashem le'mor. The Jewish people asked Hashem, they inquired of the Urim and the Tumim, Mi ya'ale lanu el ha-Kanani b'tchila li'lochim bo. Who should, right? The Canaanim are left in the land of Israel. Who should go fight against them? Who should go fight against them? What's fascinating here, the Malbim points out, it's most after Yehoshua dies, again, connecting Yehoshua to Shoftim with the word va, yehi, and, right? And it happened. And these are two Sfarim that are deeply connected. Yehoshua dies. There's no one to ask. Usually, you go to Yehoshua. Yehoshua is the conduit, right? Is the messenger, the go-between between a Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. That's gone. We don't have that anymore. Vayishalu b'nei Yisrael. All the Jewish people get up together. The Malbim points out over here. The Malbim points out, b'chai Yehoshua lo hutzruchu lish'ol b'ur v'tumim. In the entire life of Yehoshua, they never did this. They never asked the Urim v'Tumim. Wasn't necessary. Ki Yehoshua seder hakol, or seder hakol, al pi divrei Hashem. Yehoshua set it all up, through God. Now Yehoshua dies. Somebody needs to take action. Needs to take action. One of the Sfarim we're gonna learn more about this year is through the Sefer, is Rav Moshe David Vali. Rav Moshe David Vali was a very unique character, an individual in our history. He lived in the late 16, early 1700s. He was a student of the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato. Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato was the author of one of the most important Musar Sfarim Ad Yom Hazeh, called the Mesilas Yesharim. The Ramchal died very young. He died as the Rav of Amsterdam. Amsterdam used to have a very large Jewish community. Now it is dying out. They waited an hour. All the guys there should be, hakamadis in the shidduch scene. But one of his main talmidim, the Ramchal was also a huge Kabbalist. He was deeply seated in Kabbalah. He wrote many, many Kabbalistic svarim. Rav Moshe David Vali was one of his main students, and he has a perush on all of Tanakh. You could find it on HebrewBooks.org, website available to everybody. His sefer on Yehoshua and Shoftim is called Mizrach HaShemesh. Mizrach HaShemesh, which is a fascinating name, which actually leads us into his first comment he makes in the sefer. So he writes Sefer Yehoshua for him. It's not just a pashta like Rashi or the Radak or the Malbim, who are all fascinating in their own right, but they write in a certain style and they're answering certain questions, al pi pshuto shel mikra, based on the literal interpretation. Rav Moshe David Vali adds an extra component, which is Kabbalah. We call maybe Hasidus today. There was no Chassidus necessarily around. It was just beginning back then. But up he Kabbalah, so drash, fascinating ideas. So he writes here the following. He quotes, he doesn't quote, but he's referencing a Gemara, Maseches Baba Basra. The Gemara Maseches Baba Basra tells us that Moshe was the sun and Yehoshua was the moon. Right, the moon is just a reflection of the sun, connoting al pipshat a lower level leadership or low level connection to God and nevuah than Moshe Rabbeinu was. So he writes here something very, very. He frames this in a great way. He says, "Kfar pei rashnu shen hagas osha Moshe haisan hagas hashemesh." The way that Moshe works with the world. He's like the sun. Why? If you have the sun out, you don't need anything else. The sun does its job on its own and gives so much light. There's no work from the people. Moshe gave tremendous shefa, you know, divine influence to the Jewish people. Yeshua, not the same. It's not the same. There's light, but you need to work on that light, and the people need to get more involved. Vachareha, so what comes next? What is the next thing of things that you know, in the sky that make light? So you have the sun, then you have the moon, and then you have the stars. Vachareha and hagasam shel shoftim, shen hagas hakochavim. He says that the shoftim are like the stars. This he adds, the Gemara doesn't write this. Sheredvarim holchim beseder. We are compared to the sun, the moon, the stars, and everything else. All the other nations are not compared to the vastness of the world, the emptiness of the world. After Yehoshua died and the moon leadership is gone, the Bnei Yisrael didn't know who's next. As opposed to the moon, where it's obvious the moon is the next leader, there's millions of stars that are around. So we don't know which one of us should be the next leader. We don't know which one should go up and should be the next light. Right? Who should be it? And that's the language here. You go now to the Pasuk, the language he writes is very, very, we say, glat. Mi ya'ale lanu elaknani batchila lilachim bo. Who should go up, should rise up, should enlighten the Jewish people next? Who is next up as the leader? Vayomer Hashem. Hashem answers them. And we'll conclude with this Pasuk. Yehuda ya'ale. Yehuda should lead. Hine nasati es haaretz biyado. I've given Yehuda the land in their hands. Yehuda. Why is that significant and important? Some say that this is a fulfillment of a prophecy. At the end of Sefer Bereishis, listen to this pasuk. Lo yaser shevim Yehuda. The scepter shall never depart from Yehuda, meaning Yehuda is the shevet that takes the mantle of leadership. Yehoshua understood, and God understood, that the leadership of Yehoshua was temporal. It was not going to last because he was not from shevet Yehuda. U'mechokek mibein raglav. Right? And the staff should not leave between his feet, meaning he's the one that should be sitting on the throne. Ad ki avo Shiloh. Until Shiloh comes. Which sounds like, when Shiloh comes, he should be the leader. Velo yikas amim. So what is Shiloh? So the Midrashim are abound. What's Shiloh? Shiloh is Melech HaMashiach. The gematria of Shiloh and Mashiach are the same. Shiloh is David HaMelech. Shiloh is the Beis HaMikdash. That's when the Malchus of Yehuda should kick in. But literal interpretation here is, where was the Mishkan at this moment? The Mishkan right now is in a city called Shiloh. The Mishkan right now is situated in Shiloh. It was in Shiloh for 369 years. When we learn about Chana going to the Mishkan to visit, right, with Eli, a Kohen, and with her husband, Elkanah, that was in Shiloh. It was destroyed a few years later in Sefer Shmuel. But it was, so it's simple. Maybe Yehoshua didn't get a leader because he felt right now the progression is, I did my job. The Jewish people now are settled in the land of Israel. Yehuda takes over. Ad Yavo Shiloh, Ad Ki Yavo Shiloh. The literal interpretation is, it's time for the next phase of the Jewish people.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Shiloh was located where Yehuda? Where Yehuda?
Where, Where you saying where in Eretz Yisrael is Shilo located?
No, different shvatim at different parts of Eretz Yisrael. So was Shilo located where Shevet Yehuda was?
That's a good question.
Which would make sense.
It could be.
Okay, so that's the first question. And
it could be.
Okay, and the other thing is when Sefer of Shoftim starts, were Shoftim, these leaders, already previously appointed before the Sefer even begins? Were they in existence?
Who?
The Shoftim, were they in existence when the Sefer Shoftim begins?
Meaning this model of leadership? Is that, Milti, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, in other words, when Yeshua was in charge, he didn't have any lieutenants like somebody... No. Like a Nasi, like in the Midbar, Moshe had Nasiim.
Yeah.
As his lieutenants.
So presumably there were Nasiim. There were Nasiim. That didn't go away. But there was no formal Shoftim role. No.
There was no Shoftim role.
Okay. No.
So it's obvious from the first Pasuk that Hashem had the intention of Malchus from the beginning to run Eretz Yisrael.
It could. Technically, Yeshua had the status of Malchus, and so did Moshe, at least according to the Rambam.
No, but in the Rambam writes that you read in the beginning of Shoftim, it's talking about Yehuda. Yehuda, we know, and then the pasuk in from the bracha in Yaakov's bracha to Yehuda, that he would have the Malchus. So it's obvious from the beginning that the Malchus of Shoftim, that the intention was Malchus.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, then there had to be a transition between Yehoshua and Malchus. So why did we have to go through all the corruption of all the Shoftim in order to get to Malchus?
That's what we'll learn about. I think that's what the Sefer is. We'll see the failures.
Okay.
And according to our Moshe David Vali, he's probably saying is that maybe they needed to go through leadership and all the Shvatim also, you know, before we get to Malchus, which transitions from Shmuel to Shaul. By the way, Shaul was not from Yehuda either.
Right.
Ultimately to David. Again, that's like, we'll have to discuss that. Why that was? How can that be? Maybe the first Shofet didn't last long enough or didn't pass it on in the right way. And there might have been, again, another void in leadership, that there was no, you know, immediate handoff from one to the other. There were voids and vacuums, which leads to, failures in society and major egregious errors, mistakes.
The weakness, I think, of the Shoftim was that they were basically from one tribe. The tribes were not unified.
Yeah.
Each tribe had his own shofet. Each tribe had his own leader. And with that type of a situation, you can't win.
Yeah.
Until David HaMelech came and unified.
100%. Yeah. Shmuel did a good job too, but Shmuel is one of my favorites. I'm deferential to Shmuel. But Shmuel did a good job also of unifying. It's not so clear in the Psukim, but there's some allusions to that. But we'll talk about it. I think it's fascinating, a lot to talk about, a lot of personalities, and really a lot to learn. It's very, very rich, safe, and I look forward to learning it with you.
Rabbi.
A great day. Yes.
Rabbi. So even